Welcome to the Online Success Journey Podcast, your opportunity to discover and learn from entrepreneurs like yourself. This is not your typical podcast, but a place where you can get the real story and find out how real people encounter speed bumps and detours, but journey through to find success. Now, here's your host for the Online Success Journey Podcast, Patience.
Hello everyone and welcome to Online Success Journey. This is episode 168. Are you ready to join the clan? Today we have Shannon Evans, a speaker, author, a coach and the founder of the Scholar Coach Academy. She's worked as an academic and admissions counselor for multiple colleges, including universities. Her passion is helping students develop communication skills that will serve them as they go off to college to explore the opportunities and experience that awaits them. Hello, Shannon.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for having me on your show. I'm really excited to be here.
Thank you for coming. I know the clan is anxious to hear your story, so let's get started with the basics. Can you tell my clan a little bit about your background, about what you did before you started your own online business?
Well, I have been involved in education in various forms, probably since day one. I actually started out as an engineer back in the day, and then I went back to school because I had children, and it was difficult to live in a travel trailer and work as an engineer and raise children. So I went back and I got a degree in mathematics with a teaching certificate as well as an English degree. And the joke was I was the only person at the university to graduate with a Bachelor of Science in English instead of a Bachelor of Arts. So, because I had all those laboratories, I wasn't about to take up a foreign language just to get a degree. So they just gave me a Bachelor of Science. And I started working while I was working on my post-bac and starting my master's. I somehow fell into coaching tennis players who were non-native English speakers from Asia at the university in how to write at the collegiate level and how to help with their matriculation through the various courses and understanding how the university system worked because their advisors just didn't have that much time. And so that was a job that just kind of fell to me and I loved it. And then I was invited to work in college advising and then in college admissions, and it just continued from there. And so throughout my career, I've been involved either in developing training services for colleges and universities or organizations that help students matriculate through the from high school into the collegiate system or through college into their post-bac. And so that was kind of how it all started, and it's just grown from there.
It has grown to the point that now you founded your own academy website, or should I say your business?
Yes, I did. Because there were so many parents who had questions and who wanted to pay me for my time to answer their specific questions for their student.
And on top of that, I see you are an author as well. Is that something you wanted to do when you were young, or is that something just developed as you started teaching these foreign students?
Well, it's funny. I've been a writer all my life. I dabbled in short stories. I even had my own newspaper, an underground newspaper in elementary school. It was kind of a tell-all. And I had a little staff that I paid a nickel a piece to handwrite my one, you know, the old Big Chief tablet that the little kids had for with the big fat lines on it. So they would write my stories out by hand and then they would deliver them. And then I got busted for that because you weren't really supposed to have tell-all stories in elementary school. And so that kind of morphed into I was contributing to anthologies all the way through college. And then I started writing processes for publication within the university where I was working. And then some of those got picked up and published. And so I then realized, hey, it's not that hard to write a book. And so when there were processes or new technologies that came out that people weren't as friendly with or didn't understand necessarily the nuances where it applied to their business, I would write a how-to book. And that's kind of how that just keeps morphing.
Okay, I know you want to help with the students and the parents, but why do you do what you do?
Because life shouldn't be this difficult. People, you know, there are all these assumptions that people understand how something works or how a system works, or you should just figure it out on your own. Our lives have become far more complicated, and the layers of knowledge that are expected of you make things more complicated. And kids are incredibly overwhelmed, and there are these massive amounts of expectations put upon them today. They're supposed to be great students, great athletes. They're supposed to, you know, learn six languages, play every instrument. I mean, it's just more and more that's of a burden that's placed on them. They're so overwhelmed, they don't know where to start. And so that's where I come in, is I can help them muddle through and do what's needed to be done and do it in a timely and efficient way and get into the best university or college for them in a way that it's not as painful.
Okay. Obviously, you get paid for your advice. You don't do it for free, or do you?
Oh, no, I get paid.
Okay, you get paid. So let's put him on aside. How did you know you are successful?
Because people reach out to me. People reprint what I write. I am sought after by others in the field. And there are others who want to collaborate with me based on my body of knowledge and my body of work.
What have you learned from business as a whole?
A couple of things. One is I have a very good friend who's also been a mentor to me in many ways, who taught me that content marketing is a huge piece of what entrepreneurs have to do. But it doesn't have to be this painful mass of you have to do all of this. We don't have to become mired down and overwhelmed with all the different forms of marketing that we could do. What we need to do is find what works for us and what resonates with us. And so clearly my two styles of presentation are live and in person, such as podcasting and public speaking, and writing. I love to write. So I focus my marketing and my connections with others on those two strengths of mine, and it works. By not getting overwhelmed and worried about, oh, I should be doing video, or I should do, you know, lots of graphics, or should I do all these other things? They don't work for me. So I focus on what does work for me and putting processes in place, and it's working.
You mentioned you had a mentor. What is the most valuable thing your mentor has told you?
Stay in the lane, meaning stay on my side of the road and just keep focused on what's in the front windscreen and quit looking in the rearview mirror so much, because what's in the windscreen is bigger than what's in the rearview mirror.
What is one thing that has contributed to your success?
Probably the fact that I'm pretty stubborn, and I'll keep trying. You know, I'll keep plugging along until I figure it out. I'm very persistent, I guess.
What grounds you?
What grounds me? My family, my best friend, getting outside, getting exercise. Those things keep me grounded. My partner keeps me humble and makes me laugh a lot.
Oh, that's really nice. Okay, let's talk about your business, the mindset and the personal marketing technologies. Tell us more about it.
I teach my clients, my students, how to progress in their social and emotional intelligence so that their mindset is one of growth and forward motion. We meet sometimes once a week, sometimes twice a month, depending on where they are in the process and what particular track they're on. But we we meet often. I mean, my students don't have to be bound by brick and mortar. So their lives are incredibly busy. So I don't want to meet at their house at, 10 o'clock at night and then have to deal with the commute. So many of my students are not even in my geographic area. So we meet online and we use various technologies. We use Zoom. I use a calendar scheduling system that's online. I record using this technology called Zoom, which is free, and it's free for my students to download. And we can share our screens with each other. They can show me where they are in the process on their own screen and say a college application. But we use anything and everything available to us, not limited to and including Google Documents and Google Spreadsheets. And another technology called Loom, which is a way that I can leave essentially a postcard. It's a reminder, a video reminder to my clients that we're going to have a meeting, or I send them a congratulatory little Loom, which is, just a way of sending them a happy note with a picture attached.
How does over-involved parenting of students in the middle school and high school undetermine future success and resilience in a college?
Oh boy. Well, I call them helicopter parents, which I'm sure you've read in other people call them that, or snowplow parents. There's a certain type that just plow right over their kids, and it doesn't matter what the kid wants. The kid's going to have to do what the parent wants. What happens is, because they've not allowed their children to fail or to make their own decisions and endure the consequences of those decisions, they don't know how to pick themselves up and continue. So we talk about grit and resilience as a marker of what's going to help you persevere in times of trouble so that you can move forward and you can move through whatever things happen in your life. It could be your car breaks down on the highway and you're late for your final exam, or it could be something horrible like the death of a loved one, or they break up with their girlfriend. Well, if they're off at university and it's the first time they've ever had to deal with something so significant or even so minor on their own, they don't have the coping skills to deal with it and to understand the emotions that come with loss and disappointment and disaster, that they don't know how to move through it and to go through the stages of interpreting what has happened and know that they can still carry on. Because without those coping mechanisms, literally they will fall apart and they can't, there's no way they could be successful.
So why is it important to let your child fail earlier and often? Because failure is not a good thing to say that, oh, my child failed math, my child failed in English, my child failed in science.
Well, that look is at not the, a good thing. Well, no, but look at it from the micro. So before they get to that big failure on the test, they need to fail at things like there have to be consequences for their actions. Let's say you give them responsibilities and they don't take care of the responsibilities. Well, instead of you jumping and doing them and getting and just going, it's okay, it's okay, it's okay, I'll just do it because it's easier, that doesn't teach them anything. It's the same thing with school. There's so many parents today, believe it or not, who sit down with their child and do the homework with them or do it for them even. And so they're undermining the lessons that could be learned in those micro settings, because if they don't complete the homework, they don't turn it in, they don't, those various things, then they show up for the big test. Of course they're not going to pass the big test because they failed along the way. But there are so many places where parents are so caught up in the moment of having this perfect child in this competitive world that they don't allow them to be children. There's very little room for them to go outside and build things out of cardboard boxes and make ramps and fall off those ramps and scrape their knees and do that creative exploratory part of childhood. Everything is so micromanaged for them now that they're missing parts of the important pieces of childhood that do, by natural consequences, teach you to be more resilient and have more grit.
But do you think it is the parents' problem, or it is a new modern is moving children so fast and technologies and sitting in front of the TV, playing the play box instead of going out and having a play with the other children? And again, the safety comes into mind, thinking that the parents, when the child is upstairs playing, they are safe. When they are outside, don't know, your child could be taken. Don't you think there is also a safety issue?
It probably won't be a very popular thing to say, but I'm going to say it anyways. Stranger Danger was made up to sell things, to sell books, to sell technology, to sell the idea that our children, who are very precious to us, but it was a package that was sold to us. Growing up, there have always been horrible people in the world who do horrible things, but it abdicated the responsibility of the parent from keeping an eye on their kid. When I grew up, I can remember my mom would say, "Don't come back in until supper time." Now, that didn't mean I could go six streets over and, you know, get on the highway. But it meant there was a parameter that I knew where I could be, but I wasn't supposed to be underfoot. I was supposed to go entertain myself. I was supposed to be out in the outdoors. You know, that was kind of the way it was. And that was the way it was for all the kids. You know, I look at the affluent child and I think, oh my goodness, how do they know how to put their shoes on in the morning? Because everything's been decided for them. When you compare the affluent child to the child who, let's say the latchkey kid, the kid who grows up that one parent, usually in the household, parents working, kid comes home, they have to fix their own snack, they have to get their own homework done. They have to see to chores. They might even have to start dinner or even cook dinner. They have more grit and resilience and determination than the kid who comes home and everything's organized for them. Mommy meets them from school, has a snack in the car, takes them to their Chinese lesson, and then they leave right from Chinese lesson to go to their soccer lesson. And then after they finish playing soccer, they have a tutor that they're going to go see. You know, they've got everything set out for them. They don't have to figure anything out. There's no downtime for them.
So what advice would you give for the new parents or those ones also who have already have children, but they can get one or two nuggets from your advice?
Well, don't overschedule your child. Don't get caught up in the, we call it the keeping up with the Joneses here in the States. This competitive, well, Patty down the street is in eighth grade and she already knows she wants to go to Smith. You know, and your little Jill doesn't even know what algebra is yet because she's not even paying attention to that. You know, let our children be children and let them experience life on their terms with guidance, but not a heavy hand. You know, if you were to work for someone and they were an authoritarian and it was my way or the highway, would you stay and would you be very motivated to keep working there? Okay. If your boss micromanaged every moment of your time,
oh Lord,
would you stay?
That is not going to
happen.
Would
you be very successful in that job?
No, because I will be rebelling.
Yes. Well, welcome to childhood.
But then, okay, I get what you are saying. But then at the same time, we are thinking if we don't get these children, get coached, go soccer, go do whatever, we are feeling that if I don't get my child to do that, well, I don't have a child yet, but that's what I'm thinking in the future. If I don't get them to really go this, do that, they might be left behind.
There's something called balance. The children who do everything, who have affluent children who do everything, they go to college and they do nothing. They may get into wonderful colleges. They may look wonderful on paper, oftentimes they get to the college or the university and they crash and burn. And that's what we're seeing over and over. They lack resilience. Why do they lack resilience? They've never been left to their own devices. Suddenly we're having them leave the golden nest with a mom who, if they don't like lunch at school, mom runs them a second lunch that she's made for them. And then she carts them around everywhere else, or she has arranged so that someone else does. They've not figured out how to manage their own time. They've not managed their own interests. They don't know who they are. So they get to college and literally they're either throwing their hands up and it's a big party because they've never had to learn self-regulation. So, hey, I'm footloose and fancy free, and I'm off to enjoy the day and the world. I'm, for the first time in my life, I'm without the heavy hand upon me. Or they crawl into their room and they barely come out and they don't know how to function.
Okay, we hear you. So we have to be a bit softy. Okay, what are the qualities?
Well, I don't know that it's being a softy. I think it's just finding balance. I think it's about teaching kids early the consequences of their actions and letting them take those consequences. And the consequences don't have to be nice. We're not talking about, you know, oh, honey, you didn't go play soccer today, so, you know, that's okay. Go watch more TV. The consequence is your coach is going to be mad at you. You have to write in a letter of apology. You have to tell them the truth why you weren't there. You didn't feel like it. Guess what? You tell a coach you don't feel like being there. What's going to happen? You're going to get an earful. Mom and dad need to not get in between when the coach gives the kid an earful for his, it's the natural consequences of his actions.
Okay. Now you work in the university and the college's admission, but what are the college admission staff really look for in a student applications?
They are looking for a likable kid. They're looking for someone who meets their minimums and is usually above their minimums, in the middle range, who is well-rounded. That doesn't mean someone who's played three sports and, you know, speaks six languages. They're looking for a kid who is a good fit for the social culture and the academic culture of their school. So I tell parents that you really need to take your kid on that campus and let them have a complete tour and even go see a class or meet with a professor and get to know if that school is actually a good fit before they apply. Just because it sounds good on paper and it's, you know, academically a very remarkable school, it doesn't mean it's a remarkable fit for your student. And so it's just like the student should find a good fit, the colleges are looking for a good fit.
Why do 1 in 3 college students transfer at least once in their college career, and how can you reduce that chance for your child?
Well, 1 in 3 kids transfer because they're told where to go to college, or it looks good on paper that they apply and get into XYZ college, but they never bothered to go visit that college before they were enrolled. And so they're going to a college that they don't know anything about. And they get there, and let's say the kid is very artistically minded, and the school is a math and science school. It might teach art, it might teach the arts, but it's not their focus. And so clearly that's not a good fit for that student. Other kids will get into a college and never even check to make sure that it has the major that they're interested in. So there again, they have to transfer because it doesn't have what they want to study. So that costs extra time and money. Other students, when they get there, they do not feel like they fit in. It's not a good social or emotional fit for them. Maybe they're a kid who thrives in the city and it's a suburban college. Or maybe it's a kid who hates the city and he gets there and they're overwhelmed and the class sizes are huge, and it's just not a good fit for that student. So I really emphasize with my clients about finding that right fit so that they reduce the chance of transfer.
Right. You talked about your students or your clients you meet online, but what type of clientele do you take on? Do you take on the ones who are already in the middle in the college or the ones who are already starting? And what parent can really contact you?
Okay, so my clients are typically high school sophomores and juniors who are interested in examining schools that might be a good fit for them. They may or may not know what they want to study and what they want to do with their career. So I help them on the career choice, the career path of choices and types of coursework to explore. I also work with a lot of athletes who would like to play college sports, and so they would like to be recruited and are not being recruited, or they think they're being recruited and they're really not, and helping them to find colleges and coaches that would be interested in them playing their sport at their school. Another group I work with are students who did not work with me to choose a college, who do end up on the transfer path and are very unhappy, and they're not sure how to do the transfer process and are overwhelmed and trying to figure things out. So I help them make an educational plan because sometimes they have to leave the university they're in for academic reasons. And so I help them to find success at another college or maybe even a community college. So if they end up at a community college, they will have to transfer one more time. So I show them how to transfer without losing all of their credits so that they only have 2 more years of college left usually when they leave the community college. So it's a very complicated,
It is a long process.
yes, it is. The transfer process is, there's a lot of emotional stuff that goes along with the transfer because oftentimes they feel like they failed because the school wasn't the right fit for them. And so there's a almost like a mourning process that they have to go through to understand what happened and process that, and then teaching them how to push through that and put it behind them and just go, it's just another piece of the learning puzzle instead of looking at it as a personal failure.
And how much would a parent will be prepared to pay you, and how long do you stay with this child? 1 year, 2 year? How long
Depends
is
on
the
the age.
contract?
And it depends. So if I'm working with college athletes, I charge $10,000 and it's a 28-week process. However, at times that goes on further because it depends on the sport and the student's needs. But on average, it's 26 to 28 weeks that we work together, almost on a weekly basis. If I'm working with transfer students and college students who are not planning to play sports, I charge $5,000 for 28 weeks.
Okay, so where can we find your details and how can we get in contact with you?
You can email me at shannon@thescholarcoach.com, or you can go on my website, thescholarcoach.com, and schedule a call with me. I have my calendar on my website if someone wants to just schedule a call right away.
So, Clan, there will be more from Shannon in a moment. If you are listening on one of the many podcasting platforms rather than my website, and you are encouraged by Shannon's journey, go to onlinesuccessjourney.com for a bonus portion of the interview. The Online Success Journey is a wonderful membership community built for people searching for the path to success. We are one big clan and you can be part of this community for free. Once you have joined the clan, click on part two of Shannon's journey or over 100 other journeys that are available and learn how you can find the right path for your own online success journey. That's a wrap, clan. Remember, success is a journey. Patience and Shannon.
This is not the end of the journey. We hope you've enjoyed listening to part one and want to be sure you know there is a second part to this and every journey podcast at onlinesuccessjourney.com, filled with even more success tips, uplifting stories, and even a bit of fun. There are dozens of episodes only available to the members of the Online Success Journey Clan. Check out the website and click on Join the Clan for more information. Patience would like to thank you for listening to this podcast, and she has a free audio gift for you at her website. Go to OnlineSuccessJourney.com for instant access to this gift. Of course, you know that listening to the journeys of others helps each of us chart our own path. So make sure you're subscribed to be notified as each new interview is posted. There are so many ways to stay connected to the Online Success Journey and to listen in. And if you're enjoying the podcast, we appreciate your help in telling others. One of the best ways to share the benefit you get is to rate and review it at Stitcher and other sites by clicking the stars or completing the ratings form, by clicking thumbs up and leaving a comment on YouTube, or liking and sharing the podcast on social media. To review the podcast within iTunes, simply open iTunes to the podcast, click on Ratings and Reviews, then write a review. On behalf of Patience, and until next time, thanks once more for listening. It is our hope that this podcast will guide you on your own online success journey.